This is a Pinball News production.
Well, welcome everybody. My name's Martin Ayub. I'm the editor of Pinball News, and I'm here with the legendary John Trudeau, who's going to talk us through his history of game design in the pinball industry. And he's one of the most prolific and most innovative designers, I think, in the whole business. So we've got some very interesting games to look at as we go along.
They are interesting, some of them.
Yeah. We've got some which never made production, and some which were low production numbers, and some which I'm sure you'll all be very familiar.
So it started in 1979 when I took a job at Gameplan. It's a little company in Addison, Illinois, and they were making cocktail pinball machines. And while I was there, I was also lucky enough to do some artwork for one of the games. This is a game that never was produced. I did artwork for a cocktail pinball, which it was just totally on my own. There was no game that ever existed like this. This is all just plain drawing on a piece of paper. Kings of the Road. Obviously a sports car theme.
Had there been cocktail pinballs by that stage, or was this a completely New York concept?
When I walked in there, they were making them. Their whole idea of producing the pinball machine was to sell the surface of that play field to a vendor. And originally they were licensing the play fields to different manufacturers. We did Camel Lights. They did Black Velvet Liquors. There was a whole plethora of different companies that they were appealing to. Now, then they found out that, we have a limited distribution for these. We've already done the development on the game itself, so they rethemed them and reskinned them and made them into games like Foxy Lady and Star Trip and Family Fun, which you probably have never heard of, but they sold a lot of cocktail machines with those names, and they weren't licensed at all. It was all original stuff. Cocktail machines were a crazy adventure. They're very hard to design, unfortunately. But anyhow, going on, I did artwork there for a game called Global Warfare, which this is the back glass of. This was Gameplan's adventure into the wide-body game, and they made 10 of them. And I think Roger Sharp has one. He co-designed it, I believe, with Ed Cibola, who was the head of engineering at that time. These are some of the sketches, my early sketches of the game, and the second sketch got real close to the final drawing. This is a game that was never produced. This was my first whitewood I ever did at Gottlieb. Now I've left Gameplan, went to Gottlieb. This one was called Tidal Wave. In the center, which you can't hardly see, this is the only picture I have of it, but there's a vertical loop, and that was the Tidal Wave shot through the spinner, and it would go around and come out. But this is just a crummy, it never made production. This is another one that didn't make production. It's, what was it called? Pipeline. Right. These are the games from Jay's collection of my games that didn't make it. This one also. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have to give a big thanks to the Internet Pinball Database guys, Jay Stafford and Chris Wolf, who have such an amazing resource that we were able to pull this together very, very quickly for today.
Oh, yeah. It's nice. Some of these games I really even almost don't remember because they were built. We tried them. It didn't work so good, so we let them go. It's another one called Titan. It had three levels. Lower level like a black hole and an upper level on top of it. Here's my first production game, Rocky. Very colorful. We split the flippers on these. It was just an idea that one of the heads of engineering had. He says, well, he had seen something earlier, and I don't remember the game that he was talking about, but so we decided to try this, and it worked out pretty good on Rocky. Rocky is an unusual game, but if you You play each of the sides as a separate bottom on a pinball machine. You will have no problem enjoying the game and understanding it. Nice. The Rocky logo in the middle of the right side there was a result of taking out one of the jet pumpers. There was one there in order to open the game up a little more and get some flow back to the top. We pulled a jet bumper and said, now what are we going to do with the space? So we put the logo on there. Here's another game that didn't make it. So I was always trying something goofy. Spirit. That was my second game from Golly. I like this game. I still like it. I have a friend in Pennsylvania. He has one. When I go visit him, I play a lot. It's basically a very easy game to understand it and to play. It's to capture the ball. You can get into multi-ball. There's, get your extra ball from different targets, different levels. It forces you to go to different levels too. The game. This was called Striker. This playfield was originally going to be a science fiction type game. But they wanted to get a sports theme, specifically soccer, for the foreign distribution. And I said, I don't know anything about soccer at the time. I don't know a lot of it anymore anyhow. But so they gave it to one of the programmers who did know soccer, Alan Edwall, and he rethemed the game. And then the artist just took off with it, making it a soccer game. I don't think we sold a whole lot of these. What, it was 600 or something? Is there a number on there?
910.
Oh, that's more than I thought. Here's another one that never got built. No name for it either. Just trying something different.
It's got quite a few similarities with the game.
With Qbert? Yeah, a little bit. Mm. Yeah, but it's a narrow game, another game. I'm picking themes that hadn't been done, and just to see if I can get, a game that's fun to play and easy to understand. And some of them just don't work. This is Krull. The movie Krull from Columbia was supposed to be their big blockbuster, so we were asked to develop a pinball machine along with them doing the movie. Columbia Pictures had purchased Gottlieb by this time, and we were just a subsidiary, more or less. There were two games. There was this one, and there was a game by Ed Krinsky, who had designed an entire playfield that was made out of a half-inch plexiglass, and the whole thing was transparent. And he had a lower level underneath it, and the shift in lighting when you went down to play the lower level was really striking. But it was very, very expensive, and it would be very hard to manufacture any number of it. So, unfortunately, there's not even a picture of it existing, only in my brain. That's it. But that was fun. But they made this, and they made another 10 of these because right at this point they decided, well, it's time to get out of big, expensive pinball machines. And, oh, this is the nice back glass from it. It's a beautiful job. I have the artist's name, and I can't recall who it was. It wasn't somebody in-house. It was somebody else. And then Qbert, I thought, maybe came before this. Maybe not. Qbert, again, it was very unusual layout, an effort to cash in, more or less, on the Qbert sensation. And we did okay with this one. How many games did we sell in this one? Another 800?
880.
Yeah. And like most of these went overseas. The pinball machine was showing its age, I guess. It wasn't as popular as it used to be. The Sega systems were coming out, the Ataris and everybody else, and everybody found that they could stay home and entertain themselves. That's just, everybody knows the history of pinball. And this is just a close-up of the unusual flipper arrangement on Qbert. This one I called QB. It's just for no other reason than it was just going to be like a countertop game. But it wasn't that much fun. And here's another one. This is my experiment in slingshots that I wanted to see if I could capture a ball and contain the action up at the top of the game with the drop targets. And those slingshots actually rotated a number of degrees to try and keep the action up and down, up and down, up and down. But it didn't make any difference which way you put the slingshots. The ball still got out of there. And it was a kind of a failed slingshot experiment. Oop, don't want to pass one up there.
I like the idea of the flippers kicking it out of the out lane. That's
down here? I did that on Spirit, too. Spirit's got that. There was six flippers on that game. There's an extra button when it comes down the out lane. There's long out lanes on Spirit, so you can see the ball coming, and you can time that shot pretty good, and it'll go in through the gate.
And a stargate target you can hit.
Mm-hmm. What have we got here? Yeah, I thought maybe if they wanted to continue to try and do a crawl again, there was another play field for them. But they didn't, so we didn't. And rat race, I think this was. Getting the cheese and chasing the mice away. And this was the games. This was one of the most awful play fields I ever put together. Play-wise, I can remember because it stunk so badly. The action was terrible. The flow of the ball was terrible, and I'm glad it died. But we had the idea of winning the medals and everything we liked, so we went ahead and I relayed it out and did another game, and that one got produced.
One thing to bear in mind when looking at all these play fields is that the first Gottlieb one we looked at was 1981. Here, we're only in 1983. So we're just over 2 years, and all these different games have been designed by John.
Yeah. Yes?
What's the cost to produce a whitewood?
I didn't really pay attention to the cost of it. My job was to get something that's fun to play up and running and within a certain time frame, and if I didn't do that, we'd send people home from the factory, and that was not a good thing. So I always felt there was a safety in numbers. So I just kept on going, and didn't think much about failing. But every once in a while, as you can see, there were failures. And I wasn't afraid to say, yeah, this one doesn't work. And we went on. Just move on. Here's another double-decker that didn't make it.
It's a big window on that game.
It's the size of the black window, black hole window. That, I believe, is the haunted house one. It's in green. Yeah, but that's how big that window was, and it's put into a standard-sized pinball. This is the game I did for Game Plan that went into their archive when they decided not to make pinball machines anymore. I had left the company and went on to work for Gottlieb, and this was sitting in their, what they call their morgue, for a couple of years at least. And when I was at a trade show, I was surprised, still associated with Gottlieb, I was surprised to walk over to the Gottlieb, to the Game Plan booth and see Attila the Hun there. And I was very pleasantly surprised. And my buddy, my mentor, Ed Cibola, he got a good laugh out of it. Surprise, surprise, here, it's back. We actually made it. Good. Weren't too many changes. This is part of the austerity mode when Gottlieb was changed to Milestar. We could make pinball machines, but we couldn't spend any money. So everything that you see on the games from that era, there was very little unique stuff. This was all things that were tried and true in the inventory, and there was no new design work on them except for the layout of the playfield. This is Alien Star, by the way. And here's the games. This is the one that I hated so badly. It was one of the worst games I ever did. Relayed it out, and it was a fun game to play. And just collect your gold medals. This was about the same time as the Los Angeles Olympics, I believe, the Summer Olympics. 84?
84.
Yeah.
But I guess you couldn't call it the Olympics.
We could, but we'd have to pay a lot of money.
Yeah, and we weren't into spending money.
No, we were into spending money. We were into making money. So all the games that got designed, you didn't see. Well, you'll see them later. But they're more or less just copies of very popular themes, but it wasn't called the same. This one turns out to be a very plain Jane game, but it's fun to play. It's shoot the spinners, essentially, and all the other action is kind of secondary. But you're moving the ball up the play field, you know, or the lights. You know, that's the ball on the gridiron. And it worked out real well. It was very popular. It still is very popular, much to my surprise. This is another game that never was produced. And then Ice Fever. This is also, this is when we started Premiere. This is one of the first games we pushed out. Touchdown was also produced at both companies. It was the samples were produced at MyoStar, and then they closed it, and we finished production at Premiere. And I believe this one was the one that followed it. And here's a game that never got made. I think it was Battleship.
Sub Chase,
yeah. Something like that. Here's an unusual little item. my homage to bingo games. I tried to do something that's just totally, totally different. Collecting the total of 7. And you could make them by bumping the ball around. This had a very shallow angle to it, so the ball would float a lot like the old bingo games would. I think we went down to 3 degrees on this, actually. It used the standard pinball size ball, though. So all the hardware, we were able to use the same hardware. We didn't have to go reinvent anything. But you can total from the first row to the second row and get a 7, and you would get some substantial score. I don't remember all the rules. And then there were also wild cards that were just, you got the 7 right away. You come out to the right or to the left and reshoot the ball up to the top. But this was a kind of just a crazy game. And although people thought it was interesting and they were kind of having fun with it, they said, it's too close to a bingo game. We can't do it. They were afraid of it. It was just scary, I guess. So we didn't do it.
How many places at the time would not have allowed that sort of game?
I don't know. Pinball had changed a lot. You didn't see too many bingos at that point on the streets. They were pretty much gone by that point. In my teenage years, that's what I liked to play, is the bingo machine, because they paid. Yeah. Gambling. Bad boys.
But this was never thought to be a payout, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Just for amusement.
I wouldn't ever put anything out like that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's true. Once something's in position, they don't want to give up anything. But they got their taxes and licensing fees. My tribute to the Chicago Cubs, my favorite baseball team, the lovable losers, as they used to be called. They're not so much losers anymore, though. They're doing quite well the last couple of years. So my fingers are crossed, hoping they'll make the World Series this year. We'll see. But I was able to talk management into doing a baseball game, which is very highly unusual, because baseball doesn't fly in Europe. They don't know what it is. It's a strange animal to them. But we made it in 1985, I believe, and it was called Chicago Cubs Triple Play. And I believe there is still one in the family lounge at Wrigley Field. Still being played. Pretty old. This is another game that didn't make it. Snooker. And Tyrannosaurus Rex. Look at all them lights. I had to figure out what to do with Tyrannosaurus Rex, and that was a spell out. Long spell out.
T-Rex would have been better.
Why lose all the letters? Tag team game just before Rock. This was our last Backlash game. And I liked this game. I thought that it came out pretty good. It's a wrestling game. This also featured team play where you could combine players 1 and 3 and 2 and 4 as teams, and then the scores would combine. So you could actually play team pinball with it.
I have a question.
Take how many of these?
The early ones?
Yeah.
No.
What did you toss them in
the trash? Well, we stripped them, first of all. If I had a 3-bank on one game, that 3-bank probably migrated to 5 or 6 games before it finally either was finally worn out or something was wrong with it. But, yeah, the Gottlieb mechanical designer, Roman Garbark, who was called Doc, and he was just sensational at making things that wouldn't fall apart. He made everything like tanks. So all the early Gottliebs from the 70s and 60s, they don't break. That's why they were so popular, because they were built like tanks. Rock, this is the one right after Tag Team. And this is the one Steve Ritchie called me up on and said, how dare you make a game without jet bumpers? And we're good friends. We've been friends for a long time. And so that was kind of breaking the ice between the companies, too. So we talked off and on ever since then. It's been fun. Now he's my next-door neighbor, and John Borg's on the other side of me. So we're pretty close still. You don't want me to look at you, do you, James? Okay. Martin has got plenty of pictures, too. All right, this is also Rock from the playfield level. Nice close-up. And instead of the jet bumpers, I put a small area. You can't see it there. You can see it here. Small area up to the top left there that had 2 other small flippers there and a target bank that you could knock down. It was kind of a contained action area. And that took the place of the 3 jet bumpers that probably would have ended up there. Jimmy did it. Don't be going away with it. Come on, it was a customized thing. And so we decided, I had another game in there in line to go. It was called Aces, that never saw production, although we were ready to go with production. It had the number and everything. And I also did this game, Raven, and it had a ramp on it. And we hadn't had any games in ramps for a long time. And we played this, and we had the little helicopter on the right side that would spin every time you shot through the spinner. And it didn't do anything. It just spun. The rotor would go around. And everybody thought it was kind of fun. But the layout on this is kind of an homage to one of my favorite games from Steve Ritchie. That was Firepower, which there's one here, and I got to play, and I had a good time with it. But Raven sold real well and got us on a launch onto, here's Rock again. That came out of order.
Uncle.
And then came Hollywood Heat. This was another game that wasn't Miami Vice, but it was Hollywood Heat. So we actually went down to Miami to shoot the back glass. You didn't take a picture of the back glass,
did
you?
I didn't take a picture.
Oh, too bad.
There's
a little story behind the back glass, which they don't have here. They have a Hollywood Heat here, but it's got the new back glass in it. The picture was taken actually on Ocean Boulevard with a brand new Ferrari, or not brand new, a classic Ferrari, totally restored, which they rolled off the trailer in front of the hotel, got the models up, took the picture, rolled the car back up on the trailer, never started it, and they went away. Well, at the time, the hotel has these 3 nice long fluorescent tubes in front, you know, for decoration, because it's very Art Deco. The one on the right side was out during the photo shoot. Well, they took one of the other ones and photoshopped it over and lit it up. Unfortunately, if you look on the automobile, the reflection of the hotel only shows 2 lights being lit. So the other one is out on the reflection of the car. Anyhow, that's just a little thing that I found, you know, years later. I went, look, you guys missed. This is also here at the show, and I tried playing it, but it broke. Damn. Genesis. This is a fun game. This is my tribute to Metropolis, one of my favorite old-time science fiction movies. 1926, I think. It's an old Fritz Lang movie from Germany, and I loved it. And I says, I wanted to make this thing totally monochromatic. And I, as you can see, I lost the battle. But it's kind of, it's subdued. It's a lot of blues and grays, and they threw the purple ramps in at the last minute.
Did you investigate whether you could theme it after the
movie?
Oh,
to use it?
Yeah.
Well, at that point, at premiere, that really wasn't a question because we weren't licensing anything. It was like, we can copy it. Mm. That's what it was. It was a copy. Can we say Top Gun? And that's basically what happened here too. This is a fun game too. It's very unusual. This one, I finally got to do the vertical loop on a game, and this one had a captive area in the top left corner, not really captive, but the ball fed to a flipper that you could shoot it through a vertical loop and bring it back up to the top rollovers. A lot of plastics laid up on top of each other to make it look like it was a cloudy sky and you were flying. Yay. I did move the flippers all the way over to the right side on this game for the normal bottom, and I was able to squeeze another one in on the left side. So there were four flippers, the two on the right, the one on the bottom left, and there's a right flipper about just above those spot targets that shot you through the vertical loop. Monte Carlo was actually a fun game. It had a lot on it. It had four drop target banks, a roulette wheel, a steel ramp that went up, that opened and closed, what we called stargates at the time, and a nice plastic ramp on the right side that would bring you around. There was a ton of stuff to shoot at in this game. We sold a lot of them too. How many?
What's 4,300.
4,300 games over that. That was good for premiere. That's a game I don't run into hardly at all. I don't know. I think it's in somebody's basement. All of them.
They must be out there somewhere.
Yeah, they are. They're somewhere. Vacation. That was from spring break. This I did do a shooter on it. I had a button that would shoot the balls electrically out in order to be able to feed the ball out onto the playfield when you were awarded multi-ball, and then they all came out. Boom, boom, boom. There are four flippers, the three that you see on the bottom, and there's a small one up on the top right. Mm-hmm. There's a rather dark area that has a drop target bank there that you can wail away on.
Do you think you get away with doing that kind of main flipper arrangement these days?
Something like that. Yeah, we could.
Yeah.
You have to. Right now I think we're into a mode where we like to give the players what they're looking for too, and split it up a little bit. But this is a little different. I don't know if I can get away with the flipper on the upper area there, but we'll see. Maybe one day, you never know what's going to show up. Here's a game that didn't make it. This was the Chutes, which was kind of the winter sports like bobsledding and stuff. Victory for driver one. it was an internal joke because it said that all the time. Victory for driver two, whoever was the winner of the game. This had a double-level game, and it was good. This one had a Vitrograph playfield. It was actually coated with a thin Mylar sheet, and we were trying to get to production with this. And most of them were fine, but there were a few that didn't want to cooperate, and we never actually found out why, and so we bailed on it. And I don't think there was any victories that weren't produced this way, but I know there was Diamond Ladies that were produced like this and had screened artwork, because that was the time they pulled the Vitrograph idea out, because Premier was good at advancing ideas, too. We were the first ones that did the alphanumeric display, of course, and we also did the Translite. That was one of our ideas. Oh, thank you. I don't mind them playing. TX Sector. Is there one here? Yeah, I think there is. Yeah. Listen to this game when you go, if you go listen to it, if you go see it. It's got some great sounds on it. It's really strange. The back glass was almost an afterthought. We had a glass that looked, you know, like a conventional photograph of these people getting beamed somewhere. And someone had the idea of showing the negative, and we looked at the negative, and we passed it around the table, and we all said, that's the back glass. It was just that, which it was very unusual. And, yeah, the game's fun to play. I like this game.
It's got some really good lighting effects when you beam from one area to the other.
Right. This is the shell game. There's three balls in the game. When you first set it up, the ball comes into the shooter lane. You shoot, and when you shoot it in the captive area, it eats the ball and gives you another ball back into the shooter lane. That's the only time it ever does it. And then the ball is always captured, and you shoot the opposite side, and it fakes like there's a transportation from one side to the other, and the ball that's captured kicks out, and the other one remains in its captive state. So it was like a shell game type thing. And this is a game that never made it. Clowns, I think it was.
Big Top,
yeah.
Did you get to choose your topics?
Yeah, pretty much. No, we worked on a very open suggestion idea too. A lot of the themes like Gold Wings, that was just straight from Top Gun, and Hollywood Heat, straight from Miami Vice. Very popular things at the time, and I was all for it. I was happy doing it. As long as you got a happy camper on the design end, you usually turn out some pretty good games. RoboWar was supposed to be a modernization of Sinbad, I believe, with the single, the double, and the triple target going across the playfield. But I was supposed to change it a little bit too. This one I wasn't too happy with, but the game turned out okay. The other one was Excalibur. I think there was a game called Countdown. That's pretty much has the four banks and two other banks up top. But I had to put ramps on it and make it different, and that's what came out of it. And then I got to do a couple of cocktail machines. We were approached by an outside company called International Concepts, and they had an idea to use the cocktail pinball for their own little private licensing, and they would try to license areas to people to have an exclusive rights to put the cocktail machine there, and nobody else would invade their area. Well, you know how that works. There's always somebody crossing the line someplace. But this was the second one. The first one was actually Night Moves, and we thought we would be one and done. But apparently they were successful enough, and they sold enough of these. We got a count on these on the top there? 500?
No, unknown.
Not in these, no, because they didn't go under the Gottlieb or the Premier one. Game.
377.
Okay. But yeah, because I knew there was less Caribbean cruises because they didn't have that. We were surprised that they wanted us to do another game. So then I had a chance to really try and get creative on it, and this was it. This is the one game I think I would like to buy yet and take home, because then I can put a tablecloth over it and put a lamp on it when I'm not using it. That's the alphanumeric display that Gottlieb was using at the time. Let me go back a couple. Let's see here, it's up on the top on this one. Way up on the top on that cabinet, and the other ones don't have the back glass with them, unfortunately. There it is. There in the center there, that black that area where the screen is. Only because the original cocktail machines had them in the bottom arch, in the card holder on the bottom, and they split the display up, two on one side, two on the other, and in the center, I believe they had the ball and play and the credits display. So we didn't have the luxury of putting it there. We had this display. I said, let's just put it in the middle, and it worked out. And we ended up screening a little bit of information on it, kept it to a minimum. But it worked nicely. And this is my last game that I stayed and babysat out of Premier, Silver Slugger. It's a single-level game. It's supposed to be a very inexpensive game. And we wanted to get this thing out for under $2,000. I don't think we did. I think it was like $2,200 or $2,300 by the time it finally hit the street. But people liked it, and they bought it. And here again, here's another baseball game. And I don't know. I guess we didn't sell a lot of them to Europe. We must have sold a bunch of them here because they wanted to make the street-level games, as they called it back then. And that's where we had our differences of opinion. And I left them with the white wood of this game, Deadly Weapon, and left Premier and went to Williams Bally Midway. And I was thrown into the jaws with Python Angelo. And we did a couple of games together right away. And that's where he gave me the moniker Dr. Flash, because we were doing both two games at the same time. And this one was, I wish I would have had more time to spend on this game, because I think it could have turned out a lot better than it had. It's one of my favorite themes too, Looney Tunes. I love Bugs Bunny. But we were also doing this game at the same time. And Python had the idea for the head spinning around, and that basically was about it that I inherited and was asked to finish the game up. So we have a cooperative effort on this. It's very unusual to see designers have a cooperative effort. But we did this, and I think this one came out real good, too. And I really love the Dutch pinball conversion to the DMD. It's great. It's great. I finally got to play it a few weeks back, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, really play it, you know, not just one game and run away. Black Rose was my last original theme that wasn't a license.
Was that theme yours?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we said, let's do a pirate game. Nobody's done a pirate game in ages. Yeah, let's make the captain a girl. Okay. So she became Black Rose. And this little mechanism on her, the cannon that oscillates back and forth, has a catapult in there, which was taken off of, I think, big guns. That was a Mark Ritchie game. And I'm sure they've used it before also. But I mounted it on an oscillating mechanism that the people in production pleaded with me never to use again, because they just had a very hard time getting that thing in level and functioning. Once it was in there, it was fine. But they didn't like building that one. I liked this game. I thought that was kind of a fun game. The artwork was Pat McMahon. And we all have cameos in the back house on that game. Then came the creature. I was given a young fellow that just started, Jeff Johnson. He's a programmer, a real hot whip. So we were kind of thrown into this, and I wanted to do something in 3D. And this theme was just begging and begging for me to do it. I had a lot of talking to do with the management. They said, why would you want to do a 1953 black and white movie? And I says, it's not just the movie. And I try to tell them the idea behind it with the driving and everything else, which is actually the theme of the game, is driving, is working your way through the driving and all the wonderful things that happened at the driving. And this one came out good. That's this great. Is a goodie. Yeah. And right after that was the wide body incident. We had Twilight Zone, I think, before this, and then this one, and Star Trek, yeah, Next Generation. And there was just like enough time for everybody to do one of the wide bodies. And I think we were all done with it at that point. We didn't want to do it anymore. And here again, Steve came and told me, Richie, he says, where are the jet bumpers? You didn't use jet bumpers in this game. Okay, well, that's where you got the dead world.
So, I guess I don't understand why it means wider, but why was it less fun to do that?
It just is geometrically. If you notice on this game, there's not a lot on the outsides. It's because the flippers don't lend themselves to shoot out there, and it's no sense in giving unless, like on this, I ended up putting a flipper on it halfway up the left side and halfway up the right side and making a smaller area that you can play around in. The one from the left side had two or three shots to make a loop all the way back to itself or up a ramp or there, I believe it was a target there. The little tiny one on the right side also makes a loop, and there was a number. It was either two or three shots for it to make also. So it turned out good. It was a fun exercise. Actually, the Flintstones was going to be a wide body also, but we decided not to go wide body anymore. So there's a couple of preliminary sketches I have of it being much wider. I had a bird circling around. I would pick up the ball in a magnet and drop it into different craters or volcanoes or whatever it was. But when I went to the smaller version of the game, there was no space for it. So it didn't make the transition. But the artists got crazy on this one. This was fun with all the sculpts, the dinosaurs and the buildings. And the entire bottom arch, the card holder, is an injection mold.
And there's quite a lot of similarities in this game, in the software, with this game, Creature, and in the previous game, Judge Dredd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the sort of move your car, same kind of mode in there, and some other references as well. Was it the same programming team or same design team?
Yes,
completely.
Yep, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I think this one we changed the music fella. Dave Zabriskie came in, and I worked with him at. I want to say it was Premiere. Everybody runs into everybody. It's amazing to keep it straight. But David has a PhD in music, and he's extremely talented. And when I got him to do this, he was having a lot of fun. It was like a cartoon for him. And we tried to get the actual theme song from Hanna-Barbera and the studios that had it, but their master was done optically, and it had deteriorated over the years. So he got the sheet music, totally recreated it, hired the singers, went to a studio. I was privileged enough to go with him that day. And he actually had six or seven people in the studio sing Flintstones, Meet the Flintstones. It was a great thing to do and to watch. There's a lot of things that you learn in the studio that it's not apparent when you hear the game. So we had fun with this one, too.
And I think there's a kind of sing-along on the DMD.
Yes, there is. Yeah, at my insistence, by the way, because I says this theme is too good to waste just to have, you know, play halfway and cut off, like at the end of the game. I says, no, there's got to be in a track mode. So I guess when you're the high game to date, you put your initials, you get the show. Or it'll be in the attract mode if you set it up that way. And then came the theme that nobody wanted. It went around twice in the engineering area. Who wants to do Congo? No, not me. I'm going to pass on it. No, who wants to do Congo? No, not me. It literally went around everybody twice. And unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, it came around to they had to use it or lose it, and they wanted to use it. So I was next, and I got chosen. So I did Congo. The movie was just okay. I think I liked the game a lot, though. The game got pretty good. The window is the creature from the Black Lagoon, of course, turned upside down. The gray gorilla was actually sculpted by Stan Winston, the Oscar award-winning special effects guy, which I was very fortunate enough to meet when we went out to look at what was going on for this game. The team got flown out to Hollywood for a few days, and that's the way Williams did their thing. That was a lot of fun. And Vacation Pinball, I was a consultant for Chicago Gaming for a very short time, and they asked me to do a game for them. So I laid out a game, and there were bad times there, let's put it that way. I wasn't given the ability, the power to do what I wanted to do here. And we parted ways in a very early state of this game. So I had left the Whitewood, and Steve Kordick came in and worked to finish it up. And they did whatever they wanted to with it. The theme was the only thing that I left with it. We were going to do a vacation, and I thought it was a great theme. I still think it could be a fun theme, but I don't think they did very well with the game. Nobody there knew pinball, but they all thought they did know pinball, and that was the problem. And I hate to badmouth people, but that's the way that game came out. It was awful. And then a few years later, I got the opportunity. Mr. George Gomez gave me a phone call. He says, "Hey, John, you ever think about coming back into pinball?" I says, "I don't know, man. I got a pretty good job right now." He says, "Let's talk." So we had lunch, and he made me a very generous offer. And I says, "Okay, let's go back." I had an agreement with I was designing a game for Andy Highway at the same time. So I told George about it. I says, "We're going to have to wait until this one's done." So I finished up the design. Andrew has it, and it's in his bank. And if he ever produces it, then you'll see it. But other than that, it's totally under wraps. It's his game to play. But I was brought in, and I was offered this as a theme. And I says, "Yeah, I can do a car game." And that's what came out. It wasn't my, it wasn't a first choice of mine, but it wasn't a bad choice. So Mustang came out pretty good at the end when we did some software updates, which usually is the case nowadays, I guess, unfortunately. WrestleMania was another 4-month game, unfortunately. We had a theme that we were working with for a good 4 or 5 months, and we got to the point where the artwork was going down on it, and these people that wanted to license it to us wanted total control over the artwork. They wanted to make something that looked like a work of art and not like a pinball machine. And everybody at the company just said, no, we can't do this. We have to have it our way. And this went back and forth, and we just decided, I'm sorry, we're not going to use it. Well, now we're stuck with a time slot to fill. So I hurried up and lived up to my name and did this play field. And it came out pretty good, actually. I was able to get three levels of action out of a single piece of wood, which is why the pro also has an upper level with the ring there. It all comes out of the one play field blank. This is the LE, of course, with the screen in it. And then we have the game that's over there right now, my little Ghosty Busters. This one came out real good, too.
And this was your choice of theme?
Yeah, this was my choice. When I had walked in, I had told George and Gary that here's a list of things that I would really love to do, and this was one of them. And they said, okay, let's do it. Their argument, they were dragging their feet a little bit with it. It was because it's an old theme. It's an old game. It's an old movie. It's tired. I said, no, this is something that's timeless. It's classic. And hopefully I've been proven right. So maybe I'll get to do another classic piece again someday.
And there was nobody who was pushing you towards the new Ghostbusters movie
There was some very quick thoughts, and everybody went, no.
But the movie studio were okay with you using the original.
Yes, they were very enthusiastic for us to use this, specifically this one, and they didn't mention using the new movie either. And we were coming out before the new movie, so that was another good thing about it. And I think it came out right. I really love and I enjoy playing the pro on this one. And we had to pull a couple of features out to get it, the price tag down enough to offer it as a pro. And it didn't seem to hurt the game at all. There's features on this one that now on the LE that we're showing here that are cool, though. The Ecto goggles and the little helix ramp and the under the playfield ramp. Good stuff.
Were the Ecto goggles sort of fairly easy to get working okay? Because it seems to vary depending on the height of the player.
Yeah, the actual viewing angle. We had a compromise, pretty much. And I tried to make a big enough surface there. That surface is adjustable left and right, too, if you need to move it left or right. To optimize the gaze, but it came out okay. If you're anywhere from 5 foot to 6 foot six, you could probably see it.
And where are you with production on this game now?
They're making the LEs.
The LEs, right.
They're making the LEs.
Because we obviously have a premium
Right, that's the
here, but it's not really a premium.
No, it's not. It's they made one premium cabinet just for this show, and they grabbed one of the LE Playfields and put it in there. So the signature is on the bottom of the game. The gentleman that bought it, it's got a unique game.
Okay, well, we've got about 5 minutes before we have to be out of here. So has anybody here got any questions for John about any of the games that you've seen, or indeed any of the design processes?
Yes. Yeah.
You talked about, like early on when you picked the themes, how, oh, this one didn't work, this one didn't work. Well, when you're given a theme, have you had to make several designs to make it work?
You know, I was never, in those days, it was just like, they pretty much left it up to me to create something, and I would mention in passing almost, you know, that a theme, and everybody was okay with. They were very general, like a circus or you know, fast cars or something like that, and they go, okay, let's go with it. You know, that was it. Later on, the licensing now has become so critical and specific that you don't really have a chance to fail, although. In this situation, you'll make your first whitewood, and you may have to adjust that to its second or third whitewood, which Ghostbusters had two whitewoods, the one that you see sometimes on the internet database is the original whitewood, and there's a 5 bank of targets in there that just didn't work, and we removed those and put the single captive ball in and the Slimer target right there. And that worked out. And it was more or less not the targets themselves, but where the ball went after it hit the targets. You got to take all that into consideration. So that was version 2. Yes?
Over your career, what percentage of games you made versus you designing have actually gone into production?
Oh, I want to say probably... God, that's a good question. I would say 70%. Yeah, they have gone into production. Maybe more, maybe 80. The ones that I was able to turn out a playfield because the boards were pretty simple back then, too. We didn't have all this licensing to worry about. I was pretty much given free rein to do whatever I wanted to do. So it was easier enough just to say, that one didn't work, throw it out, grab another piece of wood. And I was also sketching all the time too, you know. I had layouts on paper. There you go. Yeah.
The division of labor between the engineer and the designer. Do you have to work with what the engineers have created, or do you get to tell the engineers, "I'd like to make this work"?
The second one. Yeah, that's the idea of creating the game, and how he gets from A to B, it's up to him. Yeah, he says that's yours. You make the mechanism. The Slimer guy, we ended up making two different mechanisms, one for the Pro and one for the LE, because I didn't want to leave him out of the Pro, because he's fun to shoot. Just beat him up.
Okay, we have
one
another
more
question. Okay.
So when did you come up with the idea for the Magna Slings, and what do you prefer best on?
Okay, good question. Magna Slings were a remnant from my last game at Williams that never got produced. It was called Aces Escape from the Bermuda Triangle. And the whitewood was starting to get built. It was not a functional whitewood at that point. But I had Magna Slings in it. And none of the development had been done on them. That was done at Stern. And a year ago, we had Magna Slings on just a plain piece of wood, just to see if they would work, and we had to play with them. If you look at the game, the rubber line is up higher because the ball was lofting off the magnets, and we didn't want that. It would just tear up the play field, so we moved the rubber line up higher and put rubber rings on the posts where the rubber usually is, and the magnets work out really good. I think they're fun. They do crazy things. The ghosts are alive, so to speak.
Okay, well, I think we're there.
Yep.
Can I just ask you to put your hands together and give John a nice round of applause?
Thank you for coming.